Hello to you all and welcome to Viewpoints on today's show. The Steph Peaks and Friends drag show promises a next level event at Liverpool's Astor Theatre.
Listen, I like to say expect the unexpected. 19 plus in a drag queen with a microphone, it can only go one way. So I just think that going in with no expectations is probably the safest bet, but be prepared to leave wanting so much more.
Wilbur Force's fundraising committee will host the first ever community clothing swap.
So I said to the group, so what if we try to organize a community clothing swap where it's free for everybody, you don't even have to bring clothes if you just want to come and see and need something? And they're like, yeah, I have stuff. I'm sure everybody has stuff, right?
A World War II hero was honored in Cobourg, Ontario and in Norway for paving the path for women to serve.
Her legacy reminds us that courage knows no borders and that history is shaped by those who dare to cross boundaries, literal and societal. Let this statue and its twin across the sea remind us to make waves, waves of remembrance, waves of unity, and waves of change.
The Courtenay Youth Climate Corps recaps its first summer in Courtenay.
It really helps, I think, everyone feel like they're not alone. They just care so much.
And we say farewell as the curtain falls on Viewpoints, which is leaving the airwaves. Well, that's us. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to Viewpoints. Thanks for being with us. Boris Hassan with you for the next and last 30 minutes. Let's pretend all is well and kick things off at Liverpool's Astor Theatre with some fun. The Liverpool landmark has for 120 years now welcomed a wide array of performers to its stage, from Rita McNeil to the Royal Shakespeare Company to Mr. Dress-Up. But this coming Saturday, a different kind of artist will sashay onto the Astor stage. The Steph Peaks and Friends drag show will feature 8 drag performers. Steph Peaks, alias Chase Hudson, is a 27-year-old pastry chef in Halifax. Peaks will be hosting the show and performing with 7 other artists: Randy E., Roganus, Brooke Rivers, Mike Hunt, Katana Skin, Andrew Guinness, X, and the Halifax drag icon, El Noir. In Liverpool, Nova Scotia, here's Rick Conrad.
The Steph Peaks and Friends drag show will feature 8 drag performers, some kings, some queens. Out of drag, Steph Peaks is Chase Hudson, a 27-year-old pastry chef in Halifax. Hudson says that he and the other artists plan to deliver a show like no other.
Listen, I like to say expect the unexpected. 19 plus in a drag queen with a microphone, it can only go one way. So I just think that going in with no expectations is probably the safest bet, but be prepared to leave wanting so much more.
Hudson got his start in drag on Halloween 4 years ago. Living in his hometown of Annapolis Royal, he says doing a drag show was his way of coming out to friends and family.
I've been told since this started that not a single person has been surprised that this is the road that things have gone down. Like, my daycare teacher, she came to my first show, which is crazy because I spent so many years at that daycare, and she still says to this day that it makes the most sense to her because I would boss everybody around at daycare in the dress-up closet and get everybody dressed up and choreograph numbers. And apparently it's been a long time coming.
Those first shows to about a dozen people quickly gained a larger following, and soon Hudson, as Steph Peaks, was touring to Toronto, Ottawa, New Brunswick, and PEI. Peaks also played to thousands at Halifax Pride.
Drag has gotten me out of my shell. Chase isn't the most confident person, and I know it sounds crazy because you think you put on a lot of makeup and, you know, a wig, and Chase is still there, but there's something about it for me. When I'm in drag, it's such an escape from, for lack of a better word, being me, that it makes me feel so me.
Hudson says watching Drag Race, getting ideas online, and a lot of trial and error helped him develop his character as Steph Peaks, a play on what he does as a pastry chef, whipping cream to Steph Peaks.
When I was coming up with my character, I always said I didn't want to be, you know, a carbon copy of something or somebody else.
Steph Peaks will be hosting the show in Liverpool and performing with seven other artists, including some drag royalty like Halifax icon El Noir.
Listen, when you get a good show, you have to bring the top tier performers down.
While drag has become more mainstream in the past few years, it's also come with some considerable backlash. When the Astor announced the show on Facebook, some comments were so bad that the theater had to issue a statement confirming their support for the LGBT community, performers, and audience.
At the end of the day, we're coming to do one thing and one thing only, and that is entertain and, you know, get a little of attention for ourselves. The last thing I'm going to do is give energy to somebody who doesn't want to give positive energy back. That night, there's going to be so many people in that theater that are there to have fun and are there to show love and to support the queer community and support drag as an art form.
Anne Hudson says there will be lots to love on the Astor stage on Saturday night, with lip syncing and live singing divas and some real showstoppers.
I think people should look forward to a show that Liverpool has never seen yet. There is so many things cooking behind the scenes for this show that I think if you don't come to the show, you're going to hear from a friend that it was otherworldly. There's something about a drag show in a theater setting where these artists can truly do whatever they want because they're not limited to the venue size or tables and chairs of a restaurant that make this show next level.
The Steph Peaks and Friends drag show is at 7:30 on Saturday, September 27th at the Astor Theater. I'm Rick Conrad.
The city of Cobourg, Ontario, recently paid a fitting tribute to a World War II trailblazer, a woman who would not only become the first to operate a wireless radio on a naval ship, but inspired other women to join the war effort. While not being permitted to serve for Canada or England, Fern Blaget Sunde enlisted in the Norwegian merchant ships in the Battle of the Atlantic. At that time, 78 transatlantic voyages came to support the Allied forces. Twin statues are now erected in the town of Cobourg and in Norway to honor Mrs. Blaget Sunde's accomplishments and inspirations. Her legacy and courage and a desire to fight for peace and democracy have now strengthened the link between the two nations. Dan Jones brought this back to us.
As the Cobourg Legion Pipes and Drums opened to begin an emotional tribute linking two towns and two countries, made possible by a woman bravely serving aboard Norwegian merchant ships. Identical statues of Fern Blaget Sunde are now erected in both Cobourg, her hometown, and Farsund, Norway, where her and her husband Gerner Sunde raised their family. A ceremony Friday where Blaget Sunde's two children were in attendance on the shore of Lake Ontario at her life-sized bronze statue titled Make Waves recognized her contributions as the first female wireless radio operator. Fern Sundet Sletten says her mother truly believed in democracy at a time of global war.
So today we remember our mother and hero, Fern Sunde, who grew up here in Cobourg and became the Western world's first female wireless radio operator at sea. We remember a brave woman who believed in and fought for democracy in a world at war.
She always dreamed of sailing the high seas, but knew that women were not permitted to join the armed forces of Canada and Britain. Blaget Sunde secretly sent a letter to the Norwegian Shipping Company in 1941, praising the work of three Norwegian cargo ships during the war effort. She answered an urgent call for a radio operator aboard the Norwegian ship MS Mosdale, where she would later meet her husband. Norway had no prohibition against women in the war, and she became the only woman on that ship in the radio room. She made 78 transatlantic voyages navigating treacherous seas of German U-boats, where 50% of the Norwegian fleet would be sunk by the end of the war. earning the nickname Sparks, Blodgett Sunde would go on to inspire a new generation of women in Canada and Scandinavian countries to join the merchant ships. In 1943, she was awarded the Norwegian War Medal, the first female to be honored with that designation. Norwegian ambassador designate Hanne Erlikson says Blodgett Sunde's legacy will be one of courage and societal change.
Her legacy reminds us that courage knows no borders and that history is shaped by those who dare to cross boundaries, literal and societal. Let this statue and its twin across the sea remind us to make waves, waves of remembrance, waves of unity, and waves of change.
A ceremony was held in May in Norway to honor Blodgett Sunde's contributions. A documentary on her life and accomplishments is being produced. Reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
From the annual Maple Fest to the penny raffle and awarding student bursaries, the Wilberforce Fundraising Committee is always trying to find ways to help its community. Wilberforce is in Ontario, located about an hour north of Lakefield. That is where Janice Dams and her Wilberforce Clothing Swap group are getting ready to host yet another community effort, their first clothing swap. It's scheduled to be held at the Lloyd Watson Memorial Community Center on Saturday, October 4. The event is free and everyone is invited to come and visit, browse the clothing, and take home as many clothes as they want. The idea is to help individuals and families offset the cost of clothes while keeping unwanted items out of the landfill. Elizabeth Oakley in Haliburton, Ontario.
Janice Doms loves her community of Wilberforce. It's a place where neighbors are friends and people go out of their way to help others in need. That's why Doms is excited about the upcoming clothing swap taking place on Saturday, October the 4th. Organized and run by the Wilberforce Fundraising Committee, the event is aimed at helping individuals and families find new to them clothing for free while keeping unwanted items out of the landfill.
I'm part of the Wilberforce Fundraising Committee. And so as a committee, we try to come up with initiatives throughout the year that will bring fun and or raise money back to the community. I think it's probably been running for like 50 years, at least. Back in the day, it was called the Wilberforce Rec Board, and it was actually municipality driven. Like there was staff members and usually a council member on it. And then over time, you just become like a volunteer group sort of thing, right? So there's a couple things we do every year consistently. It's our go-tos. But the last couple of years, we've been trying to think of like, what else can we do? What else can be fun and different? And I had been talking to my sister who lives in Newmarket, and she said just within their little community block, the ladies all get together twice a year. I think they do it spring and fall, and they have like a lunch and cheese and crackers and wine, kind of thing. And they all bring their clothes that they don't want, and they all do this. They do this swap thing. And she goes, everybody goes home with stuff they never had before. They got rid of stuff they don't want. She goes, it's so much fun. And then it's like, I got thinking about up here. And I know and I see there's a lot of need for, there's a lot of people who are living just at or below the poverty level. There's not a lot of extra for anything. And I know I personally go through it seasonally, don't need these, don't need this. And the clothes go into the big bins, for donation. So I said to the group, so what if we try to organize a community clothing swap where it's free for everybody? You don't even have to bring clothes if you just want to come and see and need something. And they're like, yeah, I have stuff. I'm sure everybody has stuff, right? Or your husband's stuff or your kids that have, left home that you saw hanging in the closet, whatever not. And so it just went from there and just threw it up on social media, got some posters printed to throw around town, and then the word of mouth. And I think it's going to be a huge success.
Charity runs deep in Dom's blood, and she's thrilled to be spearheading this free initiative. There's no limit to what clothing swappers can take home. And because the aim is to keep clothing out of landfills, Dom says anything left over will be forwarded on to others.
If you want to come in and take 6 garbage bags out the door with you, that's fine. Like it's not going to the landfill and it's staying within the community where it's really needed. And then so we've had people like, well, what about all the leftover stuff? And I said, we will then find the appropriate charities to donate it to. Like there's organizations within Haliburton, there's charities in Bancroft, there's everywhere that we can then in turn redonate the remainder of the stuff to it.
The community of Wilberforce means a lot to Doms, and that's why she and the other members of the fundraising committee are so passionate about helping the people who call it home. Every year, the committee hosts a number of events meant to bring everyone together and help wherever possible.
For me personally, I feel like I'm very fortunate where I am in my life. And it's such a cliche where we have to give back, we have to give back, but we truly do. And I thought, this is something that I can really get involved in. I mean, I'm involved in a lot of things, actually, but this is one I really felt passionate about and thought, I will just spearhead this because I see it. I work in town. I see everybody come in. I kind of, you know, you get to know your customers and your people and your base of this town. And so I just saw there was really a need for this.
The Wilberforce Fundraising Committee's clothing swap takes place Saturday, October the 4th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Lloyd Watson Memorial Community Center. Clothing drop-offs will take place the day before on Friday, October the 3rd. For more information, email wilberforcefundraising@gmail.com.
This is Elizabeth Oakley.
Oi, meu amor. Tá me ouvindo? Você tá dormindo? Tem uma coisa importante que eu queria te contar. Mas eu tô com medo que meu coração silencie meus lábios. Às vezes à noite, quando eu escuto a sua respiração, eu imagino que é o mar, que essa cama é um barco, que você é o oceano me carregando para bem longe.
And to close this episode of Viewpoints, we take you to the Youth Climate Corps of British Columbia, YCC or YCCBC, which has expanded its actions to Courtenay this summer. The new division hired three young climate action mobilizers aged 17 to 30, a program coordinator and a program lead. The young team joined forces with local organizations, including Project Watershed, the Lake Trail Community Education Society, and the Lush Valley Food Action Society. As the Youth Employment Organization's first season is coming to a close, the team took that opportunity to present their achievements to the City of Courtenay in hopes of getting renewed funding for 2026. Program lead Mikasa Kwaif spoke with Head Watson about the Youth Climate Corps' impacts in the Valley and hopes for next year.
I think for the most part, people have been really happy to have us here. I think we were a little bit nervous to maybe encounter people who were not as excited to have us here, but everyone seems really happy with the work that we're doing and really happy that we're here and able to support a lot of organizations that a lot of other people already support. And everyone thinks that it's great that we're giving youth good green jobs.
The local division came to the Valley through the recommendation and request of Janine Tazioli, manager of environmental engineering for the City of Courtenay, who learned of the organization at an event where the YCC was presenting. The city was able to help support the new local division with money granted to Courtenay through the local government climate action program. The Courtenay Youth Climate Corps team presented their season summary at the City of Courtenay regular council meeting on August 27th. After the presentation, Tazioli put forward the staff recommendation to continue the program and encourage other neighboring municipal governments to add their support as well.
Staff are proposing that we continue the program. Like I said, we receive provincial funding through the government climate action plans. We are proposing to continue supporting YCC, but we acknowledge that the work of YCC is within our community and our community is beyond our municipal boundary. Mm. And I think that shows with the partnerships that YCC has forged. And so it would be great to see support from some other local governments as well, and to see how far we can take this climate action on the ground and really approach this in a unified way.
The local YCC team also shared their presentation with both the City of Comox Council on September 3rd and the Comox Valley Regional District Board of Directors on September 9th. Program lead Mikasa Kwaif feels the presentations were well received and is hopeful that the program will continue next year.
And of course, we're paying them a living wage, so it makes it possible for them to choose to do this work rather than something else that might pay more but might not align as well with their values. And then they're also able to support the climate action work that's already happening in their community, and it really increases the capacity of organizations that are already doing really good work in the community.
There has been no lack of work for the climate action mobilizers this summer, partnering with groups throughout the Comox Valley. Some projects have included reducing food waste and helping redistribute food in the community with Lush Valley, monitoring water quality with local stream keeper groups, and doing ecological restoration work with Project Watershed. A highlight for Quaife has been building and strengthening community connections between the various groups the team has worked with and sharing knowledge across organizations.
It's also been really rewarding for myself and for the youth, I think, to see all of the good work that's happening in the community and to be connected with individuals in the community that really care and that are working hard to make a difference. It really helps
I think everyone feel like they're not alone.
Through the program, one of the young employees, Maya Johnson, also initiated a climate action book club at the Courtney Public Library to build greater community connection and spark conversation. The first meeting took place on September 2nd with an ambitious read, Voices for the Islands by Sheila Harrington.
I don't think everyone had fully read the book, but we still had a really great discussion, and I think everyone had a really great time. And the next book is called The Annual Migration of Clouds, and that one is a much lighter read, and I'm really excited for the next book club. And yeah, it was super fun and really inspiring, and there was really great conversation.
Quaife says the first meeting had about 7 people join, and they are hoping for many more at the next meeting on October 7th.
They are going to be on the first Tuesday of every month, and Maya, who has started the book club, is really keen to continue on after her contract ends. Obviously, we would love to continue to pay her to do it, but I think she'll stay on as a volunteer and continue to run the book clubs after the program's over. And we're hoping that we'll get funding again next year, and then that would definitely be something that we would pick up again.
Youth Climate Corps divisions across BC generally run from 4 to 8 months, with a long-term goal of running year-round, providing job experience and a living wage to groups of youth rotating through the program. Quaife says this would mean reaching more youth, as well as providing more consistency with a year-round presence and maintaining community relationships.
It's really nice to have their fresh ideas, and also they just care so much. And it's nice to have a fresh perspective that's not marred by, you know, decades of hearing about all the bad news that's happening or all of the critiques around solutions.
Thanks to Heather Watson. Well, we didn't choose this, but it's nevertheless time for us to follow suit and say goodbye to bid you farewell. Please let us take a moment to thank everyone here. Before we turn off the switch, first, a big hug to our journalists who contributed to this final edition. Rick Conrad, Heather Watson, Dan Jones, and Elizabeth Oakley. To all our journalists from east to west, north and south, who took part in the show over the years, I'll have more for you in a bit. I need to thank my close collaborators, Julia Chenu, whom I worked with in French and in English, Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox, our English national editors, also Maureen McEwen, who left us a while ago. Having the privilege of working and enjoying your day with such a great team is maybe not that common, you know. I've had this chance for many years now. I wish to acknowledge your sharp minds, love for radio and for the profession, and to tell you how much it's been fun to be with you over the years. Having pleasure at work while learning and producing is truly a gift. Merci beaucoup. You'll hear their voices and those of our many journalists in the next segment. Please stay with us. We couldn't end this series of Viewpoints without expressing a heartfelt thanks to all the composers and musicians, those who lend us their music as a backdrop, adding color and texture, well, in our opinion, to our commentary and reports over the years. To me, this show would never have been the same without them. One should never underestimate the power and benefits of music. You'll be with us right up to the end. And now it's with Navigation 4 by Flore Laurentienne that we'll spend our final moments. Viewpoints was brought to you by the Community Radio Fund and the Local Journalism Initiative, who gave us a voice. Thank you. Thanks to your local radio station, and our salute to the general managers and program directors of the 40 stations that air Viewpoints over the past 3 to 4 years. To you, our listeners, thank you, and take care of yourselves and of each other when you can. My name is Boris Chassagne, your host and producer, and as promised, I'll leave you with the voices of our journalists. We've had almost 80 of them over the years. You filled, you journalists, my imagination and work days with your curiosity and hard work. Nearly 4 years spent learning and discovering Canada through your eyes and ears. My mind and heart are content.
I'm Dan Jones.
Christina Laurie.
I'm Rick Conrad.
Tanya Organ.
This is Elizabeth Oakley.
I'm Paul Harriet.
Danny Nazvetarani, your community journalist.
I'm Andrew Dowen. This news story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, which supports the creation of original civic news.
This is Laura McKenzie.
This is Iona Cove.
I'm Jesse Wensloff.
This is Heather Watson.
This is Ian Gray.
Melissa Jamison.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia.
You're on the air with Viewpoints with Boris Sasang.
I'm Dan Messick with CICK News in Smithers, BC.
I'm Alex Wright.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosna in Kingston, Ontario.
Ed Halverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Daniela Leong in Toronto, Ontario.
Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Scano, I'm Andrew Dow in Six Nations, Ontario.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia.
Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
This has been Rose Gressa with CJRO Radio.
In Kitchener with the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Cora Cool.
This has been Eddie Sweeney reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative here in Peterborough, Ngozuanong.
Brenda Little.
I'm Ted Evans.
Mia Johnson.
Jules Bugel with the Local Journalism Initiative.
I'm Adam Innes.
Caleb Nickerson with the Local Journalism Initiative.
I'm Aidan Keenan.
Bill McCush.
I'm Sarah Drysdale.
Анастасія Борцова з новинами для радіо CHMR в рамках проєкту «Ініціатива для місцевої журналістики». Почуємося.
Reportando para CHHA 1610 AM, La Voz de la Comunidad, Ivette Hernández. Este material forma parte de la iniciativa de periodismo local del Fondo de Radios Comunitarias Canadiense.
Thanks to you all. Conrad Fox in Ottawa.
Goodbyes are always so hard. Just want to say thank you to all of our journalists across the country who have contributed such excellent material for Viewpoints all of these years, and also to you too, Boris. Week after week, you've put together a top quality journal of what's been happening across the country, and I am grateful to all of you. This is Victoria Fenner from South River, Ontario, signing off.
And from me to each and every one of you, ce matin-là, by the French group AIR, I'm Boris Chassaigne. Goodbye, everyone.